This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Hello, welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, talking to you live to tape from downtown Glen Burnie, Maryland. And man, we just can't shake this cloudy weather, but I guess it don't matter because it's still spring. It's still playoff time. And well, it's still Caps hockey we're talking about, at least for probably better part of the next week, hopefully longer, fingers crossed. So happy Mother's Day, first off, to all the moms out there, hockey moms. All our moms listening out there, and I hope you're having a nice day with the kids and reaping the rewards of that. And just because of that, I've given the mermaid another week off here. You will not be hearing her until next week when we cover this coming week's games. With me again to cover this past week's games that were played in the first round once again. Jake Michael from the Carolinas, South Carolina in particular. How you doing this evening, sir?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Pretty good. Good to have you back. And yeah, can't wait to have you give your analysis of what happened here. You were watching these games pretty intently. We actually shared a few notes back and forth during some of that. So you got some thoughts about what went on. So of course, as we're talking to you, it is Sunday, Mother's Day, after the third game of round one against the Florida Panthers. Capitals, as we speak, have a 2-1 lead in that series. I'm sure not many of the so-called experts thought the Caps would be in this position, but lo and behold, here they are. So let's just go ahead and get right to what happened on the ice. Starting with game one, which was this past Tuesday evening. And, all right, so let's see. No, that's not the right one. Let me get my newly updated iPhone straight here. Okay, all right, so Tuesday, 4-2 victory for our Washington Capitals. On to the scoring summary. 3:47 into the first on the power play. Tom Wilson opens the scoring, the series scoring, with Mantha and Schultz on the assists on that one. Nice little snapshot from the high slot. Now, unfortunately, on his very next shift, he would attempt a hit in the corner and miss pretty badly, unfortunately. And the first reports I heard were his ankle, but it turns out to be his knee. Officially it's a lower body injury, but the rumblings I'm hearing is that it's one of his knees. And so he's been day to day ever since, of course, as we'll talk about here. He's actually missed both games played since. He remains a question mark, for the rest of this series. And as some have said, the rest of the playoffs. But he opens the scoring. It's 3:47 the first on the power play. Sam Bennett, about 14 minutes later, would even the score. Gudas and Verhaeghe on the assists on that one. Now, you and I talked about this one, Jake, and there would be another goal kind of like this later on. But there was some debate amongst not us, but other Caps fans. Depending on how you looked at it, this goal either was – the defenseman in this case, Nick Jensen, misplaying it, giving the shooter too much room, or the goalie Vanacek just flat out missing it. And I came out on the latter end. How did you see that?
Initially, I was kind of on the defensive side, more specifically with Jensen. But as I watched the replay a couple more times, what I noticed is I don't think that he pinched up on Bennett, because if you watch at the bottom of the screen on that replay, Claude Giroux is driving down the left wing. So in from my perspective, if I'm a defenseman, if I go to make this play on Bennett and I miss, I'm leaving Giroux a wide open pass to the net. So I have to watch the guy without the puck as well. I'm still leaning more towards this is a goal on the defense, but I'm looking more at, I believe it was Orlov who was out there with him. I look at that because you have a one-on-two situation, basically. You have to understand the situation that's coming in on the other side. If you can step up and play the puck, then that's going to allow Jensen to play the man without the puck who's driving down towards the net. And the last thing you want to do is give Claude Giroux an open shot.
Very true. Very true. Now, remind our listeners again, what position did you play when you played?
I was in Ovi's spot. I was a left winger.
Okay. So you were mainly a left winger and on the forward position on that side?
Correct.
Okay. But yeah, sounds like you pretty much got it. I totally get the notion that, yeah, as a defenseman, you've got to keep all your options open. But yeah, I'm of the mindset when I look at the replays, I saw that there was a bit too much room for Bennett to even have the shot. And for me, that allowed him not only to take the shot, but that allowed Bennett to kind of do that across the body curl and drag move before he released the shot. And I think that kind of put Vanacek a little off balance in that he couldn't really judge where the release was going. And I would say that goal was maybe 70% defensive positioning and 30% Vanacek just missing it and not playing it as well as he could have. So I can kind of see both sides of it. But, yeah, I would say that if Jensen kind of tightens up on the coverage just a little bit, maybe that shot doesn't end up being as accurate as it ends up being. So, yeah, that was probably the one play in this game that I had a problem with. But as we come to find out, the rest of it would go fairly well, even though, well, okay, so 43 seconds in the bizarro McNugget minute, as I like to call it, 43 seconds in the next period, the man we just mentioned, Claude Giroux, scores Brad Montour on the assist. Nice backhander by Giroux. Really couldn't do much on this one. They crowded the net. They let Florida's forwards get behind them too quickly, and that was one of the keys we talked about last week, was letting Florida gain the zone too quickly, getting them too close to the net and in the middle, and of course that's that high danger area. Well, they did it on this play without exception. As Jake just said, if you give Claude Giroux a clear shot, as he's proven time and time again over his long career, he's going to bury it, and he did here. So that gave Florida the 2-1 lead, and admittedly, it wasn't looking all that great, although overall, the Caps were playing a pretty sound game all 200 feet of the ice, I would say, except for, well, the two goals, obviously, but this one by Giroux, I mean, it was just, you know, kind of a bang-bang play. Their speed and their puck movement took over, so, you know, really, really nothing they could do once they got past, you know, the defense and got control of the zone. So on to the third period, 8:14 into the third, to be exact. Kuznetsov would get a wrister past Bobrovsky on a bit of a busted play. Ovechkin actually forced a turnover, but had his momentum stopped so much that he couldn't get to the puck. And then fortunately, Kuznetsov caught wind of what happened and got into the zone behind the puck with enough speed for a semi breakaway and just slipped it past Bobrovsky to tie the game. And then 2.5 minutes later, TJ Oshie would take advantage of a great break by Dmitry Orlov, and then a nice reach find pass. Yeah, excellent play by Backstrom to make it 3-2. That would end up being the game winner. So Oshie would tip that in on the right hand side. And then the Caps managed to hang on, and then in the real McNugget minute, Lars Eller would ice it with an empty netter at 19:11, and that ended the game. First star of the game, Evgeny Kuznetsov. I thought he was probably the best player on the ice for the Caps this game. Bobrovsky was made the third star, and the reason why, in my mind, was that, well, we'd thought he would be a little bit leaky, and well, he faced 38 Washington shots and got 35 of them, and I would say many of them, at least 30-40% of them, were high quality saves, high danger chances even.
I would agree. He's been playing regular season Bobrovsky hockey. He's not been playing what we're used to seeing from him in the postseason.
And right. It's,
you know, with the exception of game three, he was lights out in those first two games.
Absolutely. And I don't want to say the Caps were lucky in piercing him three times, but part of that was, you know, being at the right place at the right time and burying your chances. But I mean, some of the stops he was coming up with, it wasn't looking too good.
Yeah, I was thinking that as I was watching. But, you know, as you said, being in the right place at the right time, if you don't mind, if I could go back to that Kuznetsov goal.
Sure.
This is the structure that they had in the neutral zone. That's what's going to allow them to be able to beat Florida. You can't fall behind them more than one goal, because if you're playing with them tied or you're playing with a lead, you can play the neutral zone in a 1-4 structure scheme. And for those of you who may not be familiar with what that is you have one defensive player who is on Florida's side of the blue line, which in this case was Ovechkin, and then you have four guys who are on the cap side of the red line. And what that does is it basically eliminates the possibility of a stretch pass. It makes a clear entry much, much more difficult to make. So there's actually a good angle of that goal. It's from the camera that's behind Bobrovsky. And if you watch, you can see Ovechkin standing in front of Weegar, and then there's four Capitals basically forming an umbrella, and it's just suffocating any chance to make a play through the neutral zone, the transition, and take control of the puck in the offensive zone. So what Weegar does is he sees that, and he realizes that he has to get through the neutral zone to even break that, so he tries to dance around Ovechkin. And a great defensive play by Ovi. And, of course, like I said, you've got four guys behind him who's watching that. Kuznetsov jumps in there and cleans it up. And that's how goals like that happen. And that's what you have to do to beat a team that has this much offensive firepower, is to not let them get set, not let them gain a clear entry, not let them get those rush chances like the Bennett goal.
Absolutely. And I think you just pretty much described it perfectly, how the Caps overall game plan is that has been successful as far as the coverage. So hopefully you listeners out there, you on the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, what have you, you know, can visualize that, visualize the five skaters lining up in that manner. And again, as long as I think the Caps stick to that game plan, then they will be successful and have been successful in two of these three games in shutting down that high-powered offense. Now, it'd be interesting to see, and you and I were talking before we went on here, be interesting to see what kind of answer or adjustment Florida has. But for this first game anyway, they really didn't seem to have much, except when the Caps had very brief breakdowns in coverage. Now let's go over the vital stats on this game. 38 shots by the Caps, as I mentioned, 32 from the Panthers. Vanacek got 30 of them, so he acquitted himself very well, I would say, except for possibly that first goal. Not as great at the faceoff dot, 47.2, but it's when it comes to playoffs, I would say the faceoffs are only critical in the last 2 minutes of a game. If the difference is one goal, one or two goals, and in general, if you can stay within 5 to 6 percentage points, you're really not that far behind. It's when you're losing, something like 7 of 10 per man is when it's really bad. Then you're kind of falling into a danger zone where you're allowing the opposition first shot at possession, which is everything in the playoffs. Power play 1 for 3 for the good guys. Penalty kill came up big, shut down two chances from the Panthers. Hits were pretty high, 99 total, 56 for the Panthers, 43 for the Caps. A pretty intense game. Of course, you come to expect that for the playoffs. Only thing I didn't like about the production was that the Caps tailed off. They started the period with 17 shots on goal. And this is where Bobrovsky was building his game. This is where it all began, because a lot of those 17 were pretty high quality chances that should have been buried but weren't, except for the efforts of Bobrovsky. But they kind of tailed off, only 7 shots, pardon me, in the third period. But overall, pretty good production-wise. So that'll wrap up game one. Pretty good effort all around. Now we're kind of hoping Tom Wilson would survive whatever his injury was in this game, but not to be. And in fact, some reports say he may miss the rest of this series, if not the whole playoff. So fingers crossed and prayers for that and all that good stuff. But yeah, I think for the foreseeable future, we're going to have to make like Tom Wilson is not going to be readily available. But I have an idea, and it's already played out a bit. I have an idea of how they can countermand that. So let's hop back to the second game, also in Sunrise. This one, well, not so much. Not so much of a success. Yeah, pretty despicable game if you were watching. I guess if I had to describe this game, the Caps played their game sort of for, I would say, about 17 minutes of the first period. And even though they fell behind 2-0, Ekblad and Barkov, the goals in the first period, they were still in it. Case in point, when Nick Backstrom, they got on the power play. Nick Backstrom nailed a bullseye of a goal right between the short side, just enough daylight left by Bobrovsky, and Backstrom nailed it. Ovechkin and Carlson on the assist on that one. And they seem to be rolling back. They seem to be taking the play back. And then the Panthers got a break about 20 seconds later on some blown coverage, and then they had a rush back. Mason Marchment gets the goal on, we could argue this all day. I don't think there is an argument. I think Vanacek definitely should have stopped this one. He let this one go right through the 5-hole. He gets better positioning, puts his stick on the ice or between his pads, something. Then this shot doesn't go in, and maybe, there's more of a chance in this game. But he definitely should have had this one. The game winner was Barkov's goal, but this was the one that absolutely killed the momentum, because after that, the whole effort just died.
Yeah, and not only that, but to piggyback off that, it's the way that the goal was scored. It's so, like, when I'm watching it and I see that, and I'm thinking, not again. It's goaltending again. And, we've discussed that's not the biggest issue, but that is a massive issue. So for that to rear its head in a playoff game, it really takes the air out of the bench. Like especially when you just put in the effort, like you were talking about the Backstrom goal to come back. And the other thing, too, is that's a basic save to make. It's one of the first things they teach goalies is to cover the bottom. Stick on the ice, make sure you're on point, squared to the puck. And it wasn't even – like, when I was watching it, it didn't even really look like a shot. It almost looked like Marchment kind of just did like a little slingshot off of that touch pass. So, I mean, I can understand why he's not – going to the butterfly because it's an odd man rush. And if you go down too early and they throw it back across, then you're just beat. But that's such a wishy-washy goal that he let in. And like you said, it deflated whatever momentum they had built. And they had played probably about, I would say, overall at that point, 18, 19, maybe 20 minutes of good hockey. So, I mean, sometimes you just have to come up with a save.
Yeah, and that was definitely one he should have had, not to overstate it, but it surprised me because I think it surprised his teammates too, because he's usually so good, Vanecek is, at covering the low side, and this one he just completely missed. And I don't know if it was just he was not ready for the shot or just not lined up, but you know, it just went right through him. It didn't beat him on stick or glove side. It just literally went right through him. And those are the goals that, you know, that your teammates see that, and they, you know, they're not going to yell at you, but at the same time, the inside, just like you said, you know, there's a feeling of, oh God, not this again. And you know, you can't shake that no matter how hard you want to. And I was kind of hoping for maybe you know, like a response, but there just wasn't one after that. And well, Florida ended up getting two more. It could have been a lot worse, but they actually ended up getting two more that period. It was late in the period. Anton Lundell from Reinhardt and Verhage, 15-24, Verhage himself from Gudas and Forsling, about 2 minutes later. And yeah, you pretty much knew that was going to be the end of it. Not going to go into those last two goals because, like we just mentioned, that third goal was the one that might as well have been the game winner, even though it wasn't, because
right.
You can mark that point in the game and see, you know, if you've been watching hockey or playing hockey, if you've been involved with it as long as we have, even if you haven't, you can tell the difference in the body language, the posture, the effort, the positioning between the first 20 odd minutes and from after this moment. You can just tell that the effort just went right out the window. And it's a shame because they look like they had the ability to come back, and they were on that road, but you know, all it takes is just that one bad goal. And you know, unfortunately, goaltending, you know, did end up being a problem. We were hoping it wasn't, but it did end up being a problem. Now what they did was they ended up putting in Samsonov in for the third period, and he ended up facing 17 shots for that whole period and got them all. Now I wouldn't say very many of them were the high danger chances, but they were all chances that a quality goalie should get, and he did get them all. That settled the question, at least for me and most fans. You know, next starter, next game, well, make it Sammy, because you know, he looked like he wanted to compete, and that we wanted to make it his net. So obviously that would settle that question. Quick rundown of the vitals before we move on and close the lid on this case. Only 27 shots on goal for the Caps in this game, and that kind of coincides with the effort. Power play came through again. Penalty came through in a big way, shut down all four chances. So that was a silver lining. Alan May pointed this out post game. Caps had 60 hits in this game, and oddly, another 99 total for both sides. I don't know how you get that back to back, but 99, 60 to 39. But Alan May pointed something out. No problem. In that the Caps seem to be going after the hit a little too often, as opposed to trying to use it in a manner in that where you're separating the puck from the carrier and trying to regain possession, as opposed to what they actually did, which is go after the hitter and then put yourself out of position. Now, let me ask you this, Jake. as a forward, you're covering defensively. What should your mindset be when you're facing a rush from the other end?
Well, my go-to thought was crap, either way, it's a different position. You as a forward, you know the basics, you know how to cover, but it's hard to keep up with some of the. If I could go back to like the Bennett goal, I would have got burned on that because I'm not used to facing a guy who's going to do a drag around me and put a shot through me. I'm not used to that. So basically the only thing that I'm doing is I'm trying to cut off any sort of passing lane. And simultaneously while doing that, I'm trying to stay out of my goalie's vision. So if you're coming down and let's just say I'm covering the left side of the defense and the puck's coming down on my side, I'm going to cheat kind of close to the inner edge of the circle, and I'm going to try to cut that lane off into the middle. So I'm basically forcing a shot. And if as long as I can do that and I can give my goalie a clear line of sight, then I'm doing that job the best that I can. I would, however, much rather be the one going on the rush.
Oh, of course. So the goal is to play the puck, really, if you think about it, versus playing the man. I think the mistake here, at least on the stat sheet total, as far as what Alan May was trying to point out, was that they were trying to play the man a little too much, and they put themselves out of position because of that. So even though the one goal that changed the game was, well, I would say 90% the goalie's fault. It started on a bad rush from the other end because of, I think it was Ovechkin who overcommitted to the hit on the other side that started the turnover and started the rush going the other way. But as Al Kokin said, even so, you're the goalie. You got it. That's a stop you have to make at that point in time. And everybody knew it. And then the momentum swung and just never came back. And I would hope. Go ahead.
I would like to point out that the defense actually did their job on that rush. Because if you go back and you look at that play, the rush actually starts in the middle of the ice, which is the last place you want it to be. They made Florida work the puck to the least favorable angle for a shot on that. And you know, as I was saying, Vanecek has a clear line of sight on the puck. You just have to make that save.
Very true. Very true. So Marchment's shot was funneled. He was actually forced almost all the way over to the right-hand side boards when he had the shot. It was on the outer, in the middle towards the edge of that right face-off circle where he was. So he was actually almost maybe 2-3 more steps, and he would have been out of position or had a really ridiculous angle to shoot at. So you would have thought that's all the more reason why the goalie should have recovered it. And at least got in front of it and did not. So, yeah, I think, again, everybody picked up on that, and that was the one that killed the momentum. Game wasn't the same after that. You might as well have stopped it there, and everybody could tell. And, yeah, hopefully they took a lesson from that, but, it was just painful to watch.
I think as we go forward with this next game, I think it becomes very clear what lesson they took from it.
Very much so. Yes, I would agree. So let's close the lid on that one and move on to the game that was played yesterday, first of the series in the confines of Cap 1. As we mentioned, there would be a goalie change. Samsonov would get the start in this one. So rundown of the scoring, 2:45 in the first. Jonathan Huberdeau snaps a wrister just over the shoulder of Samsonov to open the scoring. Duclair and Ekblad on the assist on this one. And I got to admit, when I saw this shot, I was kind of doubtful what how the game would turn out. But I got to credit the Caps in this one. They did not allow. I think some credit goes to the crowd. I really wish I was there, but I don't think the crowd let them get down, and that they didn't. The team didn't let themselves get down, so they could have just kind of retreated and not forced the game in the way they did. But it wasn't a good look. It wasn't a good start. Caps are very much more successful when they open the scoring themselves as opposed to playing from behind. But I think they reacted well in that at the very least, they let themselves survive the first 10 minutes after that. And eventually, within the McNugget minute, the first of two, actually, as it would end up, TJ Oshie, the Caps would go on the power play, one of many, six chances for the Caps, actually, on the power play. This was the, sidebar on this one. I can't believe some Florida fans had the nerve, I think it was the coach too. They had the nerve to complain about this one. To me, it was an obvious penalty. Yes, I realized the guy was falling down. Uyghur was falling down. He gets called for holding the stick. He falls down, literally rips the stick out of, who was it? Hathaway or Kuznetsov, I think.
I believe it was Hathaway.
Yeah, Hathaway. Yes, it was Hathaway, who would have had a breakaway had it not been for his stick ripped out. But Uyghur gets called for holding the stick, which leads to the penalty, which leads to the power play goal, of course, that Oshie scored. Ovechkin, his third assist, Carlson, his second. And that makes it 1-1. But I just can't believe they'd have the nerve to call that, because I can't think of a more obvious, call you can make. You literally rip the stick out of the guy's hand, thus denying a scoring chance. You can argue with that at all.
You can argue what they called. I thought holding the stick was the wrong call. If you want to call interference on that, yeah, you can make that more reasonable. I think holding the stick was the wrong call because it was inadvertent and it was a hockey play. But I mean, a lot of times, oftentimes, that is what an interference call ends up being. Holding the stick was the wrong call. I think if they call interference, people aren't making as much noise about it.
Well, I think they called it holding the stick because of the optics. I don't know what I would like to see a replay. I'm not sure of the positioning of the lead and trail officials on that one, but I think they both looked up and they saw the stick flying and they figured the obvious call would be holding the stick. So, I mean, there is a case for that, but even so, it was an obvious penalty. I mean, when it comes down to it, the intent was to deny a scoring chance by illegal means. And so something had to be called. Maybe it wasn't the right letter by letter call, but something had to be called. And, I don't see how you can let that go, but it was a justified penalty in my eyes either way. So that tied the game. So on to the second. Marcus Johansson, who is growing on me a bit. Put it this way. You knew what you were going to get as far as his defensive play. And although he had some boo-boos in the last few games of the regular season that he liked to have back, but I think his defensive play has definitely been pretty good. The question would be, what kind of offensive output would he have? Well, he put himself at the right place at the right time on this one, and which would turn out to be the game winner in front of the net. Nicklas Backstrom found Anthony Mantha, who threw it at the net. And I remember this play. It about 45 seconds before the shift before, I forget who was on the lines, but I think Connor Sherry was part of it, but his line, but they had, it was three forwards. They had, I don't know if it was an odd man rush, but they had the zone lined up pretty well. They had a good cycle going, and the three forwards just simply passed it among themselves. Neither one of them put it on net. And I think if they had, they would have gotten a rebound chance. So 45 seconds later came this play with Mantha Backstrom and Johansson, and all I could think was, just please, dear God, put it on net and something good will happen. Lo and behold, they did this time. At least Mantha did. And Johansson was there in a perfect position to pick up the rebound and pot it in. 9:51 in the second, making it 2-1, caps up for the lead for good. And then, pardon me.
The start of that goal, I'm sorry to interject, but also I just wanted to point out, too, something that really made this goal happen. If you go back a few seconds when the puck is in the cap zone, Samsonov makes a point-blank perfect save with the left pad. That's about as high risk of an opportunity as you can get, and they break down and go on the rush, and then that goal takes place. And the other thing I wanted to say, I believe it was in this game as well, when you said about not shooting the puck, Sheary had a partial breakaway opportunity. He's looking at Bobrovsky, and there are no white jerseys in between them. And he just, I don't know who he thought was there, if he saw something or thought he saw something out of the corner. He just dished the puck over to the corner for no reason, and I was mind blown by that.
I remember that play. I don't know if that came around the time or the couple shifts before, but yeah, I think it was in the second period where that happened. And yeah, I could not believe he passed up the shot and went for the pass, because he had daylight, he had room, he could have put it on net. And again, I think the way you're going to beat Bobrovsky is if you force him to give up the rebound that he can't reach, that he can't clear, and neither can his teammates conveniently enough. You know, you're going to put one past him that way more often than not. But, you know, right. In that play, at least, Sheary, for whatever reason, you know, usually he's pretty good about going to the net, but he passed that up. And fortunately, later on, they figured out that, no, you can't pass up a shot when you've got it. So I hope they stick to that, because you certainly don't want to have happen is another situation in the 2010 playoffs. Some of you might be knowing what, some of you probably nodding your heads knowing what I'm about to say here, but you don't want to get into a situation where you get halaked and the goalie gets into your head and you start second guess yourself. Always take the shot. When in doubt, put it on net. That's a golden rule of professional hockey, and they've got to keep doing that. And you know, the two times they didn't, I think as high as this score was, they could have gotten even more, could have created more chances for themselves. So that if I had to take one criticism for this game, it would be that they were a little hesitant to fire it for whatever reason.
And Jensen on the Huberto goal would also be other. And that,
thanks for reminding me. So yes, going back to that goal, that was, I would say that was a carbon copy of the Bennett goal in game one, where in my eyes, he gives him way too much room to operate. And, you know, almost an identical curl and drag move to force the angle of the shot just right so that it slips past Samsonov's shoulder and into that sweet spot between the shoulder pads and the top of the crossbar, or the bottom underside of the crossbar, actually. I tried to see if I could get a replay and post it and see if you listeners out there would be interested in comparing and judging for yourselves who was really at fault here. You know, because a lot of fans like playing the blame the goalie game. So, but again, I really think that was honestly a carbon copy of the Bennett goal, where Jensen just backed up too much and gave the shooter just too much room. And I hope that's another bad break, a bad mistake that they get out of in giving the shooter too much respect. I think if you crowd them a little more, you know, that's something that, you know, will work in your favor. Maybe, yeah, you'll get a fluky bounce like the first goal in game two, but when in doubt, I would say crowd the opposing shooter, force them to shoot it off target maybe, and you nullify the chance. But you know, they got to get out of this habit of being timid when it comes to shots both ways. So I'm hoping the coaching staff maybe had eyes on that and is working with the team, because that might be something, that might be one of those habits that creeps in that we like to talk about and ruins your overall game. So let's go ahead and finish up the summary here. Trevor Van Riemsdyk at 1849 gets a nice goal for himself. Wonderful shot. Couldn't have placed it any better. Just underneath the crossbar, his first of the playoffs. Johansson and Backstrom on the assist on that one. That made it 3-1. Start of the third period, Caps get another power play. This would be the second convert that they would make out of the six chances they get. Ovechkin scores his first of the playoffs. Sherry and Mantha get the assists on that one. And that was – so what happened was, I'm not sure why they – you know what? I don't understand why they have Sherry as the first or – I don't know. I thought it was Johansson. If I remember this play, I'm going to call up the replay. You might remember better than me, Jake, but I thought this was the play where Johansson chased it into the corner, lost his edge, managed to get it back to Mantha. Okay. I get it now. So if there were three assists allowed on this goal, then Johansson would have got a third assist. But this play does not happen with the efforts of Marcus Johansson. So he chases the puck into the corner, loses his edge, manages to get it back to Mantha, who passes it over to Sherry, who happens to be behind him, who finds a wide-open Alex Ovechkin in his office.
I don't know. 17 years. How do you – if there could be a fourth assist, it would have been given to the Florida Panthers. Because, I mean, how do you – it's seven – he was on an island.
Yes.
There was nowhere even close. If you look at the replay, there's one angle that it shows you. As you can see, as soon as he's going through with the shot, you can just look at Radko Gudas' face, and it just tells the story. Like, I don't – there's no one within 30 to 40 feet of him. And he is right there in his sweet spot where you know he's going to be.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned Gudas, because I think that's a matchup the Caps can exploit. There's a reason the Caps didn't decide to keep him. And that's because as good as he is on the physical side, in the coverage part of being a defenseman, he's not all that good. And he showed it in this play. And I think that's a matchup they can exploit, in that if the Caps play a game where they transition and they move the puck and they're not static or going backwards with it, but they constantly move the puck and move it forward, I don't think Radko Gudas has enough maneuverability or speed to put himself in the right position. I think they can exploit that and open up that side of things and give themselves chances. Whoever is playing that wing will more often than not find themselves open. And that this power play goal might have been an example of that. But I really think the more they play him, the more they can take advantage of that. And I really like to see that more. I hope the coaching staff has picked up on that as well.
I would agree.
That was the one that made it 4-1. Okay. So Carlson gets an empty netter to ice it. Because Florida decided with about 6 or 7 minutes left in the game to pull Bobrovsky, see what they could do. Carlson didn't waste much time. He was literally behind his own goal line and threw it about 184 feet down the ice to bury it. 15:40 in the third. That pretty much iced it. And then Hathaway, much deserved goal for his efforts. The whole fourth line got in on this one. Larson and Dowd on the assist. Another McNugget minute goal. So, chow down, folks, if you're in the area and you like that kind of thing. So, that made it 6-1. Of course, the game was long since over with after that. Now, the penalty that led to Ovechkin's goal, that power play chance, that, Trevor Van Riemsdyk said, in his opinion, when he was asked, that Florida didn't look all that frustrated, but, well, I beg to differ. You cross-check somebody in the back so obviously, and the referee is 10 feet in sight of that. I don't care who you are. You're going to get called. And he did, and it led to that goal, and that could not have been born of anything other than frustration in that, the Caps played their game to a T in shutting down the chances. Now, hopping over to the shots on goal, okay, so Florida did manage to get 30 shots on goal, and yes, I'm coming to it, the probably the best parts of the game, but it wasn't 40 or 50, and it could have been. And these weren't very high danger chances. So, yes, I do say they were frustrated. I do say that the Caps were able to play that game and not let, the momentum of the Florida offense that they usually get, like you mentioned before, Jake, from the neutral zone on in to the slot area is where they excel. Well, they did not let the Panthers get any flow in that area, at least not consistently enough.
Yeah, and if I could just go back to that penalty, the only reason I knew it was out of frustration was because it was Huberto. He's not a guy that normally is going to put his team in a position like that. But, they played – that's probably, honestly, in my opinion, one of the top three performances I've seen from them all year long, from offense to defense to goaltending. Let's not forget, Sammy made a lot of deflection saves. He had a lot of saves that were point-blank range. He played a solid, solid game. It's probably one of the better games I've seen him play.
And I was definitely coming to that. I certainly did not want to forget him. That was I would have to agree. That was probably the single best game he has ever played. Now, he's had shutouts in the past, and he did make probably one mistake in this one. But other than that, I think this was hopefully, and I was talking this over with a couple of other fans, hopefully this is previews of coming attractions for him. I think you and a couple of other fans I was chatting with pointed this out to me. He looked extremely calm in the net. There was none of this flailing about, moving from side to side, hoping he'd cover the angle and skating back and forth, crisscrossing his crease like a bat out of hell, hoping like hell he'd get the angle or get back in time, relying on his reactions. There was none of that in this game.
Yeah, that's probably the most poised I've seen him in his time there.
And I just want to give a shout out to another listener, Stacy Cleek. She said something like, I wish I had the comment in front of me, but she said something like that Samsonov looked so calm, just so relaxed, and did not seem to let the nerves or the pressure get to him at all. And he was rock steady in his net. No overcommitting to either side was basically the observation that she made. And I replied to her, yeah, it looked to me like he'd finally figured out that he can't play that way and be successful in the net. So going back to the stat sheet, so it was 30 shots against for him, and he got 29. That's a two-game total now of 47 shots, and he stopped 46 of them. Obviously, your save percentage is going to be pretty damn good if you stop 46 of 47. So I think they're going to ride him as far as they can go. Now, we're starting to run out of time here, so just a quick preview of what's coming up. Of course, tomorrow night, Florida is still in the house, 7 o'clock puck drop at Cap 1, and then it's on to game 5 after that, back to Florida in Sunrise, 7:30 puck drop for that one on Wednesday the 11th. So hopefully the Caps can close it out But I have a feeling Florida will have an answer of some sort. We'll just have to see how the Caps react. What are your thoughts on that before we wind it up here?
Well, there's one thing that I think that is a necessity. And you had brought up that the Caps actually had more hits in game two than Florida did. You can have more hits on the stat sheet and not be the most physically dominant team on the ice. That's very possible. What I think they did in game three very well was they set the tone. Even after the Huberdeau goal, Ovechkin and Carlson both in the first period alone had four hits each. And they weren't just like little scrums on the board or whatever. That hit Ovechkin put on Achari behind the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Oshie in the presser after the game, he said he wears the C for a reason. He's got more cred than anybody on this team does. So if he's going out there and he's banging them up, we got to do the same. We got to follow suit. That's what you have to do with a skilled team like Florida. You have to put the body on them. You have to let them know that anytime they touch the puck, there's going to be a risk that they're going to get railed. And you just have to put that fear in their mindset, because naturally as a player, what it does is you start making little tiny errors that lead to mistakes. I think the best example of that would be if you go back to that 4-minute power play in game two, there were whiff shots, there were whiff passes, and that's because you know you're about to get hit and you lose your focus a little bit. So that's one thing that they're going to have to keep up from game three. The other thing, Samsonov, if he can continue to play like that, they can beat anybody they can beat Colorado, I think, if they were to make it to the finals. If they play like that, my last thing that I would interject with is any time that you score six goals and Ovechkin only has 2 points, you're running on all cylinders. So you have to get production from the entire roster, which is what they did, especially in game three. You know, when he was out those last few games, I had made mention to you how much of that offense runs through him and how it's different when he's on the ice. And I think what we've seen now, they've put in games one and three, they put up 10 goals and he only has one of them. So it's just a much different team. So if you can keep getting that output, that production from your other guys, they've got a very good chance to beat this team, a team that had six players with at least 24 goals during the regular season. So if they can do that, I think they've got a good chance.
Absolutely. And building on those points, Ovechkin leading by example, by hitting, as long as he does not put himself out of position defensively, bang away, good sir. Do your duty. And this adds more fuel to the fire that, you know, I'll lay it out. There was an old-time Nashville Predators podcast who called him a shitty captain. Well, what do you think of him now? I beg to differ. He's not. But the second part of your point, yeah, definitely. Now, a lot of those goals were late, the fourth line especially in this game, but they're not really meaningless goals, because if you've got a taste of making it in, of getting on the score sheet, then that builds your confidence. And much was made of, as far as the balance of the attack, going to the first, you know, being top heavy, going to the first two lines. But if you can get your bottom six forwards involved in the attack more and get them confident in that they can contribute in that way, just like you said, then yes, they've got more than a chance to keep up, because there's going to come a time where they're going to need to contribute, bar none. So, good points.
We wouldn't have a cup without DSP.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yet DSP is probably the best example of your bottom six forwards absolutely having to contribute in the playoffs if you want a shot at the cup. So yeah, good point there. All right. So I think we're going to stop it here. So hopefully you can join us Monday and Wednesday night. Like I said, hopefully they wrap it up. Now, if game six is a necessity, I believe it is on for, oh boy, Friday the 13th, back at Cap One. Will be game six, a time to be announced later. So that's the schedule, at least for this week. I think game seven, if there needs to be one, will be Sunday back at Sunrise, time to be announced later. So good
that's
week all around.
Friday the 13th of the year, too.
Yeah. Well, let's hope not, but we'll see.
I swear.
Yeah, but good week all around for the Caps. Good start to the playoffs. We're halfway to getting to round two, which I think all of us would agree that's a great goal to accomplish. All right, so Jake, did you have any final thoughts for the week before we wrap it up?
Just to build on what I said, if they can manage to continue playing the way they played in game three, and the big thing is for game four, be prepared for the adjustments that Florida is going to make. Their coach, Andrew Burnett, had a very good NHL career. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to make adjustments. He knows how to make his team better. And my last thought that I would give out is just to tell all the mothers listening, have a happy Mother's Day. We appreciate you, and we love all y'all.
All right. Do appreciate that. Thank you very much. Okay, so. For Jacob Michael, this is the Blue Liner on Point, signing off and reminding you that, well, I like to eat, as everybody knows. And, well, the missus told me she'd leave me the other day if I didn't stop eating so much pasta. Well, I didn't heed her warning, and now I'm feeling cannelloni.
Jesus. I gotta go. That was a good one.
Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Let's go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.